Long Talk Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Join us on Thursday as we explore Pet Health and Homeopathy, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath Debbie Bruck, and Doctor of Veterinary Medicine, author and homeopath Christina Chambreau. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go!
Okay, we're ready. And we are here today with Dr. Christina Chambreau. And once a month on Wednesdays, we're going to be talking about pet health. Please do send us whatever questions that you have, concerns that you have that you would like to hear about, how to approach the issue, and of course, homeopathy. Let's bring it on. So we're going to be talking about something kind of unusual because I came across an article all about animals yawning. And in this article, the person had shown pictures of lions and baboons, penguins, you name it, any kind of animal, opossums, just about any animal, and they're all yawning. And I thought, this is really fascinating. What's going on here? We yawn as humans for many, many different reasons. We might be exploring that. And the animals are yawning also, probably for their own reasons. And the most famous one is the MGM lion, where you see the movie begin, Metro Golden Mayer, and you see that lion roaring and yawning. So I thought that was pretty cool too. What do you have to say about this?
Is he actually yawning, or is it just part of the roar?
I'm going to look at it now and see what he's doing. Oh, he's roaring a little bit. He's going roar, roar.
I think it's just a continuation of the roar.
Oh, let me see. I'm looking at the original old one right now.
Aww,
and
cool.
He's like looking around, a little ears wiggling back and forth, not much there. Oh, so then it was in 1925, Jackie the Lion. I don't know if that was a roar or a yawn. You know, can we make a sound when we're yawning?
No.
No, we can't. No,
you make a sound as you're exhaling.
Uh-huh.
So, but usually it's not a roar.
Right.
That's a different sound. The yawn seems to have a softer sound with it. There actually was a website that talks about a whole lot of animal, of cat behavior, postures. Like, when their ears do this, what do they mean? When their eyes do this, when their tail does this. And they talked a little bit about yawning. And you have to make a distinction in cats, and this fits perfectly with what you're saying about the MGM lion, is are they aggressively growling or are they yawning?
Mm-hmm.
And the pictures showed that it's a little difficult sometimes to tell the difference. Their mouth may be wide open, and even their ears may be back a bit in a yawn. Even though it's a yawn, it could be back. So it is difficult. According to that website, it's difficult to tell sometimes whether they're roaring or yawning.
Yes. Well, I think one of the things that I've found by looking at the rubrics in the repertory that have to do with yawning, that a lot of different body parts and organ systems are connected to this yawn. I thought that was the most fascinating things, like itching ears, itching throat. So it could be in combination with an illness, not feeling
well. And it could
well.
Be either, it could be, well, I don't think the illness is causing the yawning. When you read these rubrics, it, mm-hmm. well, some of them are abdominal pain, cramping with yawning. But I don't think the yawning is causing the abdominal pain. I think it's a concomitant symptom. That
right.
That they're yawning. I think usually it's more of an amelioration type of thing. Although some of them it's aggravating, stomach pain aggravated while yawning.
Right, and like cracking
but basically
in your jaw.
What you could see by looking at this is that every single part of the body has yawning either aggravating or ameliorating it.
Mm-hmm. What does that indicate to you?
Well, it just means that yawning is a very commonplace thing. Just like if you did a search for coughing, or you did a search for heat or a search for cold, you would mm-hmm. find those modalities showing up in every place,
and
in every body system.
Right, and I attribute that to being that it's the autonomic nervous system. It's not something that you can control. So I really found things that were related to that, like what you just said.
Uh-huh.
Coughing, you know
right.
we're going to be yawning throughout this whole show. When
well, I'm experimenting. I was trying to see if I could create a yawn, and I can.
Uh-huh.
I can create a yawn if I want to. So it could be both conscious and autonomic. But one of the things about yawning, when you read the literature about yawning, is
yep.
that
it's contagious.
They say that the reason, the rationale for yawning, is uh-huh. often to expel excess carbon dioxide and bring uh-huh. in more oxygen. So it's often when you're sort of bored, when you're bored, you yawn. And one reason for that is think about when you're excited. Are you breathing more or breathing less? When you're bored, are you breathing more or breathing less? When you're excited, it's like, oh, really? Oh, really? Oh, that's great. Oh, what fun. I'm taking lots of oxygen in. But when I'm bored, I'm
yeah.
just sort of sitting there. I'm not really inhaling a lot of oxygen.
Uh-huh.
So that may build up the carbon dioxide, thus triggering the yawn.
Right.
So,
so it's really related to that. So we can look up rubrics about being bored. And so, like, if your pet is not being stimulated enough, they don't have enough toys or interaction or affection, then we might see it in them yawning a lot. Would that
not
be true?
Not as much. Not as much with animals. That's more with people. I don't see yawning as much with boredom. And as I read about it, yes, there was that for some, but more it seems to be part of waking, and that's part of the wonderful stretching they do when they're waking.
Mm-hmm.
Cats and dogs stretch their bodies, and a yawn is just part of stretching their mouth.
Well, actually, now that you say it, there are yoga postures, yoga movements that are to open your mouth really wide, like the lion pose. That's what they say.
That's right.
You open your eyes and you open your mouth as wide as you can. You're stretching it. And even with you're doing it with your whole body, your fingers.
Right, your hands. Fingers,
everything,
yeah.
and the animals. We're mimicking the animals in that way. Is
mm-hmm.
it something that we have to teach ourselves to do because we as humans have lost that just instinct to do it?
Well, I might say we as modern humans,
uh huh,
sitting in front of computers, sitting in cars, sitting in front of TVs, have mm-hmm. may have lost that. If you're out, if you're kayaking, or you're camping or you're gardening and farming for 10 hours a day, you're using your mouth. You're not going to be yawning. You're
yes.
using your whole body that way.
So that's why maybe we're doing a lot more yawning than people in the past, because in the past they were fully oxygenated.
Yes.
Now you're yep. yawning.
I am. I know. Like I say, we're going to be doing, like you said, we're going to be doing
uh-huh.
a lot. Now, and also, the thing that I came up with that was so amazing, it talked about in cats that yawning was a sort of appeasement gesture, that it was like
giving permission for the next
to
person.
Calm.
To calm.
Or dogs would yawn to deflect a threat. So the dog may avert his gaze and yawn. So that triggers, so anxiety for animals is one way that causes yawning. So you will see animals waiting in the waiting room yawning.
And
so anxiety
to relieve
is definitely
anxiety.
One of those. Yep.
And
yep.
is that listed also in the rubrics? How would we find that? Anxiety.
I don't know that
yes,
that's true for people.
It is. Oh well, it's if it's yes, it is. It's listed. Mind anxiety with yawning is plumbum and prunus. So,
but that's not that yawning ameliorates.
Oh, I see. So you need to find something that yawning.
That's saying that when you're yawning, you're anxious.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's a concomitant along with yawning, along
mm-hmm.
with anxiety, you're yawning. So that's a little different. Now, I want to be, just because this is so interesting, I want to make sure I don't forget this. As I was reading about yawning on one of the behavior sites for cats, it turns out, this isn't directly about yawning, but it popped up. You know how cats seem to go to people who don't like cats?
Okay.
We hear that all the time. You know,
okay.
I don't like cats, and cats always come to me.
Uh-huh.
Well, here's what it is. Humans love eye contact. Cats, prolonged eye contact could be threatening. Now, that slow blink that is a cat kiss is different, but if you really, cats don't like you just to stare in their eyes. So, therefore, if you have a room of people, some of whom like cats and some who don't, the ones who like cats are going to be watching that cat come into the room. They're going to be paying attention to that cat, looking at that cat, staring at that cat. And so the cats are going to go to the people that are ignoring them because there's no eye contact.
Interesting.
I never, ever heard or thought about that before.
It's amazing the connections we're making.
I mean, you can, of course, make many other interpretations of every single thing we're saying, because this is something, it'd be great to talk to some animal communicators and see what they've picked up about dogs and cats yawning.
Well, I'm interested in learning, understanding when you say something is a concomitant or something is a byproduct or...
Mm-hmm.
I would like a differentiation between, like, so there's
modality.
All these, yeah, of these
between
things.
Modality and concomitant.
Yeah, I guess that would be, like I said, mind anxiety with yawning.
Right.
So is that a concomitant because it says with
yes.
yawning?
Yes.
Okay. And
yes.
what if it says,
as
oh,
opposed,
it's,
so the next
okay.
one, mind concentration difficult with yawning.
Okay.
So
okay.
that's, you're having trouble. When you have trouble concentrating, you yawn.
Okay.
As opposed to the next one, mind, confusion of mind, yawning ameliorates. So that would be that when you're really confused, every time you yawn, your confusion goes away.
Mm-hmm. Every time you yawn, your confusion goes away. Okay, because you're... And it's all, and every single time I seem to feel the root of the oxygen and respiration. It seems to be really
uh-huh.
tied closely to that organ system. Mm-hmm. So, and then if you talk about that, then you're talking about the blood, bringing the oxygen to the blood and the brain and being mm-hmm. able to think. And that's why there's difficulty with concentration and confusion mm-hmm. of the mind. It mm-hmm. all ties together. So tell me again, repeat one more time about the difference between a concomitant
The concomitant and aggravation is a little tricky. So if you go down two more, mind, laughing, involuntary, yawning, after. So that would be one that is an aggravation. So after you yawn, you start to laugh involuntarily. So somebody says, you know, it's really a problem. I just laugh, and I don't have any control over it. I start laughing, and it really embarrasses me that I do that, and some people get really mad at me, or I do it in the midst of a lecture, and mm-hmm. so you start asking questions. Well, is there anything that happens before you laugh? Is there anything that triggers that or anything that makes it better or worse? And they go, well, you know, I hadn't thought about that, but every time I yawn, every time I laugh involuntarily like that, I've been yawning first.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, the yawning is either considered an aggravation or an etiology.
Okay.
As opposed to the next one, mind morose, sulky, with yawning. That doesn't exactly say that yawning causes the moroseness.
Uh-huh.
But it could be that when you're morose, your carbon dioxide builds up more, and therefore you feel the need to yawn. And so that the yawning happens when you're morose. Now, one of the ways to figure these out more, because remember the repertory is just an index. So given that the repertory is an index, it's written often in sort of shorthand. And so when you want to figure out exactly what's meant by a rubric, we always go to the Materia Medica. And so you want to go to China Sulfuricum and see if you can find morose or yawning with China Sulfuricum.
And why do we want to do that?
You
want to
do that in the Materia Medica because the Materia Medica is going to give you more reading about it.
Mm-hmm.
It'll let you understand. For instance, I forget it now. It's something about itching in the anus alternating with something.
And this is for China sulfuricum?
No. The only way to figure out what's meant is by going and reading about it in the Materia Medica. So anyway, the repertory is always just an index, so you always want to go looking. So if I read about China sulfuricum, it's got great mental depression.
And I look in the mind, fits of anxiety. In the morning in bed, obliging the patient to get up sooner than he would otherwise wish. So the mind symptoms is soon after midnight with cries and this necessity for getting up, great moral depression, speechless melancholy, discouragement and inclination to weep with despair, moroseness and ill humor with yawning. It's written right there.
That's all it says is moroseness with yawning. So
moroseness,
you can't tell.
With yawning and extreme dislike to labor. So what are you looking for here?
So that's a little... sometimes it may say... it might say moroseness. They feel they have to yawn every time they feel morose. Sometimes it'll be written out more. So with that mm-hmm. one, it didn't help us that much because it was just exactly what was there.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the way that you would research each one of them to see
if you got more information from it.
Right, to see what they mean in the repertory. Because that's why you always go from the repertory to the Materia Medica. You never prescribe just from the repertory. Unless you already know the remedy, of course.
Well, it seems as if there's a connection to sleeplessness, and when you think about every time you say the word yawning, you say, are you tired? Do you need to go to sleep? So like,
or you say, are you bored?
Yeah.
With people, it's both. It's are you sleepy and are you bored?
Right. And so for animals, you're saying it's not typically boredom. It's stretching, it's waking, it's oxygen.
Anxiety. It's anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Nervousness. It's also it also can be a form of communication. So there's a submissiveness part of it. Now, mm-hmm. on the other hand, they've done a study that shows that, like with people, how yawning is contagious, that it is contagious to dogs.
Mm-hmm.
A study in Portugal tested 29 dogs, and they played recordings of the dog's owners yawning, as well as another woman, an unfamiliar woman, yawning, and a computer-stimulated yawn.
Mm-hmm.
Nearly half the dogs yawned when listening to a recording of humans yawning. When the yawn belonged to their owners, they were 5 times more likely to yawn. So they're emphasizing. And a previous experiment in London said that dogs mimic the yawn 75% of the time after seeing any human doing it. And they've observed contagious yawning in chimps, baboons, and macaques. But the main reasons for animals seems to be a type of communication, like I'm maybe a submissiveness or an anxiety, a nervousness. Or even excitement. There was one that said that very often dogs, and of course, then here we get into the discussion of what's anxious and what's anticipatory excitement. Dogs at the starting line before agility trials or before tracking or before a show will often yawn. So that could be a positive. Ooh, I'm getting excited, where you think they wouldn't be yawning, or it could just be a nerve, you know, even though they're excited and want to do that, there's still a part of nervousness with that or anxiety. So I don't know the answer to that.
It seems to be quite tied to a lot of different emotions, if you think about, or things we are considering to be emotions, sadness, when a person laughs. Is that anxiety, or is that happiness, or is that, you know, tickling their funny bone?
That's right. It could be any of the above.
And sighing. Wow. I mean, there's a lot more to yawning than anybody could have imagined. Besides just this mind symptoms and emotional symptoms, how a person is handling or an animal is handling the relationships with others in their, what do you call it, a troop? What do you call?
Family.
in their family or group. Both in their human family or if it's a wild animal, because we're talking about wild animals exhibiting this behavior as well. Where do we see it most? You said when they're waiting, anticipating in the office to come in, go into the doctor's office.
I'm not saying that's the most. I'm just listing these are multiple ways that shows up. I personally don't ever use yawning when I'm treating a case. I've never in my life used yawning
in an animal. It's kind of bizarre, isn't it?
Well, it's just a very minor thing with animals. It's not, yes, they yawn, but it'd be really difficult to ferret out the rationale as to why they are or what's triggering it or what modality it is. So it's just not very useful in terms of coming up with a remedy.
Except
I'm not even sure.
It'd
be interesting to talk to human homeopaths to see how often yawning is useful for them. I can see times where it could be with people, but...
Mm-hmm.
Not, I still wouldn't think it'd be very often.
That's one of the things why I found it unusual, because there's so many listings. There's like 8 pages or 16 pages worth of Rubik's listed, and yet how often is it used? So, and it's such a commonplace thing that we might easily overlook it, when it could be a cue to us to say, you know, this is really the remedy that's needed. So we think about itching, like if you have a rash or if you have poison ivy or herpes or something, and ranunculus is one of the main remedies that a person could use, and it's connected to eyes itching with yawning. So that would be a concomitant?
Yes. Or a trigger. That one, again, I'd have to read that one to see. Is it that every time they yawn, their eyes itch? Or is it every time their eyes are itchy, they notice they're yawning more? So you'd have to go to the Materia Medica to figure out which it was.
Well, you know, I'm just picturing in my mind an animal that is taking their paw and they're scratching, whether it's their ears or their eyes, you know, they're rubbing it, because obviously it must itch, and they're also opening their mouth wide. It's just something.
No, I got to tell you, I don't see it. I do not see that.
It's only people do that.
Well, I just don't see. I see yawning in very limited situations in animals. And you know, in 30 years, maybe it's because I'm not asking enough about it. But in, you know, it's not a symptom that appears frequently when I'm doing an intake. So, I mean, it has on occasion, but not usually.
So there's not much recorded in your notes about yawning, even though I just wanted to let folks know that in the repertory it is related to things like headaches, jaw pain or throat pain or itching, ears,
well,
your eyes, your nose.
Every part of the body. Every single section of the rubric, yawning is there. But that's true for almost anything else.
Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, like heat or cold. Heat is in every section. Cold is in every section.
And is that because it helps define all the parameters of that organ system, or
I think there's certain things that are common, and I suspect it's what we came up with at the beginning, that yawning is part of the need for more oxygen. And I suspect even when it's animals are nervous, that they're just not breathing deeply enough because they're anxious and nervous, or with people, and so therefore they yawn. But it's definitely something to see. And again, the other thing is, I think it's difficult as a symptom, even in people. I mean, I yawn, but if I were trying to tell a homeopath how yawning relates to my hip pain, it would have to be really clear cut, because if she says, well, does yawning make your hip pain better or worse? I go, well, I don't know. I don't think I yawn when my hips are hurting.
It's not something that we might be aware of. And even when I've observed people who will be sitting and yawning consistently, you know, constantly, they're yawning a lot. What's going on exactly? How would we figure that out? Whether it's one of those mental mind symptoms, or whether they are having some kind of pain in or formication or something going on, or stiffness going on with them, or if it's sleepiness.
People
are not aware of it.
In the article that you sent me, a lot of what they called yawning, I think we have to make a distinction here in animals, at least, and maybe even with people, between yawning and opening the mouth wide. So it
okay.
talks about penguins employ yawning as part of their courtship ritual.
Mm-hmm.
Baboons yawn to threaten their enemies. Well, I don't
mm-hmm.
call that a yawn. I call that opening their mouth to showing their teeth.
Fantastic.
You know, I don't think it's a yawn, but
uh-huh,
maybe
so
it is, you know.
So we're anthropomorphizing from our own
Well, I
experience.
Think this article is. I think this article is just, you know.
Extending it to the
yeah.
nth degree.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, the pictures are cute, but I, again, like at the very beginning with the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, is it yawning or is it roaring?
Correct.
The continuation of the roar. And I'm
right.
sure there is some yawn. I mean, you do see animals sometimes just lying around and they stretch and then they yawn. And
especially
as,
if it's something that's catching. So if you see
right.
one animal do it and then another animal do it down the line, then you would say it's not, unless it can. Do animals mimic each other in the stretching action that they do, in their stretching behavior?
I don't know.
Oh, we
I
got a lot of information for a PhD student who wants to investigate this. Interesting.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there's a lot out there to investigate, that's for sure.
Just ideas for folks.
That's true.
Well,
now, are we doing half an hour today or?
As long as you wish.
How long were we doing? Well, it's up to you. It's your schedule this week is the.
Well, if you had any other information that you had on. If
that
you
was
wanted
pretty much
to talk,
it on yawning, so
right. You wanted to
it
talk
would be
about
if we want to start in and do a whole different section on obsessive compulsive disorder, which yawning certainly could be obsessive compulsive
yeah.
disorder. Although again, I haven't seen that in animals that much, but they could. The main thing is I think looking at yawning is looking. Even in people, at the context in which they're yawning.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, that was very exciting, and it's making me sleepy. No, I'm ready to go ahead and pick my nails or something, or do something OCD. Do dogs do that?
Oh, absolutely. Dogs and cats and all other animals.
What are kinds of things that pets will do that we would consider OCD?
Tail chasing, lick granulomas, feather picking, stall pacing, overeating, hair pulling. Uh huh.
Oh.
Yeah. Some dogs or cats will eat until they just throw up.
Wow.
They literally can't stop themselves. They don't walk away from it.
And that means it's up to the owner to put out the right amount of food? Or
ooh,
what's
absolutely.
Going?
And,
okay.
And to treat the underlying vital force misattunement that's causing it.
Mm-hmm.
With any problem, we always want to treat the underlying vital force imbalance that's causing it, whether we use homeopathy, flower essences, Reiki, but we want to stay
mm-hmm.
away from drugs. Because they have side effects. So we want to stick with things that are less likely to have side effects.
Uh-huh, which might give them that would replace another OCD behavior, taking
no.
a drug, no?
Yeah, maybe. But usually what it does, like animals, most animals who have OCD are conventionally put on Prozac, and then Prozac uh-huh. causes liver damage.
Oh, that
or
would
they're
be.
Put on, they're put on something as severe as phenobarbital.
Mm-mm.
Zoloft. All, you know, nowadays there's tons. It used to be just ACE promazine was all we had when I was in conventional practice when I was a youngster. But
mm-hmm.
now they're using all of the human drugs, and the human drugs have tons of side effects. You see that all on TV, all the side effects.
Mm-hmm.
And those same side effects can apply to the animals. So that's why you want to stay away from drugs and spread the word. Actually, if anybody listening to this tape wanted to make a huge difference in the animal world, they would go online and they would find every blog post that has to do with animal behavior problems. And for any behavior one that talks about using drugs as a solution, they would enter a post about homeopathy and how homeopathy could cure that permanently, so the dog would not, or cat would not, have to stay on chemical drugs that might have severe side effects.
Right. And that
and then
save,
we could get it out there everywhere on the internet.
And that would save the owner a lot of money.
A lot of money,
doctor visits and paying for drugs, and a happier, healthier animal all
who
around.
Who lives a longer life.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So other things are caged animals, like all the wild animals in the zoos. If they're not if they're not given the appropriate, and here again, we have to look at two different things. When you read about OCD behaviors, is it a mistunement of the vital force, or is it an obstacle to cure? Is it a problem in the environment, the diet, or the way the animal's being treated?
Mm-hmm.
So here's an opposite of OCD, but it's a good example of how you have to make this distinction. Or is it a medical problem? That's the third possibility. Is it actually a physical organ problem that's causing the behavior? So two homeopaths came to me once, a married couple, and they said, you know, we were at a conference, and they said, can we ask you a question? I said, sure. And they said, well, our two kittens just never pay any attention to us. We got them both, I think it was a brother and sister or whatever, we got them at the same time, and we got them at about 10 weeks of age, and they're playful, and they eat well, and they're happy, but they just totally ignore us. We've had them for 2 years now, and they just play with each other. They ignore us.
Mm-hmm.
So my mind was starting through different rubrics, and but first I said, well, tell me about your day. What is it that you do with them? What's your day like? And they went, well, Monday through Saturday, we get up at 4 in the morning, and we meditate, and then we feed them, and then we leave at 6:30 in the morning, and we get home at 11 at night.
Mm-hmm.
And then on
Sunday,
we get up, we sleep in till 8, and we get up and feed them. Then we want to play with them, but they don't want to play with us.
Mm-hmm. And you're laughing your head off.
Because that's not a vital force mistunement.
Right. They figured out how to keep themselves happy without
exactly.
them.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Now, some cats might do that and play with the owners. So there were certainly, I gave them some coaching on, well, have you tried this game or this game, or have you tried catnip? Or, you know, there's certainly ways that they could get interactions, but they were just expecting it to be automatic. So
Right. Things
like examples of OCD that have been given in some of the articles I looked at are a panda or bears that pace obsessively in their cage. Well,
uh-huh.
duh, they're uh-huh. in a cage. Is that an OCD? Is that a brain lesion? Is that a chemical imbalance caused by a vital force mistunement? Or is it because they're in a cage and they're bored stiff?
Uh-huh.
If you have a parrot that is pulling its feathers, is it because the parrot's left in its cage by itself all the time and has no interaction and people aren't talking to it and totally bored?
Uh-huh.
Or is it a vital force mistunement? So always, regardless of the problem, even drinking too much and urinating too much or having diarrhea, we always have to find out if there's something causing it other than a vital force mistunement before we prescribe the homeopathic remedy, and we find that when we're doing the case taking. So another one is, so they compared, for instance, the parrot being anxious because it's in a cage and can't fly around, so it pulls its feathers, and they compare that to human hair pulling, nail biting, nail pulling, even cutting themselves.
Are you saying it's a correct comparison or not?
Yeah, it is. And, uh-huh. and because often, so the difference is, so some people who are pulling at their hair, it could be because they're living in horrible circumstances.
Uh-huh.
So you need to address that, just like you do with the bird. But there's some birds that are feather picking, and they have great environments. The people are talking to them all the time, are getting them out all the time, are working with them, are interacting with them, have plenty of toys in their cage, let them out to fly around, and they still overpick all the time.
Okay.
So that, then, is a mistunement of the vital force. That is an OCD, and that needs to be treated with homeopathy, et cetera, mm-hmm. or other holistic modalities. Tail chasing in dogs, same type of thing.
So, for a bird, for the bird, you know, if you have a hair that comes in and it's itching you, and they're constantly molting and their feathers are coming out of their skin, I could understand why they might be picking at it.
Now you have to stop there and say, what happens in the wild? In the wild, they're molting, their feathers are coming in, but they don't pick themselves raw.
Uh-huh.
It's not a natural thing. It's not itchy because the feather is coming in.
Okay, so that's what I'm getting at. I'm getting at that, not that it's a natural thing, that something is unnatural about it, because it is the way that they are meant to be, and because they're picking at it. I'm just, I guess, anthropomorphizing that it could be irritating them as it's coming in. That would be a misattunement of their vital force, because it's not doing what it's supposed to do. No, that's wrong. Okay, correct.
No. Oh, I see. You're saying that maybe it could be a medical problem caused by a misattunement of the vital force. That's causing the feather as it comes in to be itchy.
Right.
Where normally it's not itchy, but this time, for some reason, it's itchy.
Right. So it's not something exterior. It's not something, because you said this, you're saying this bird is being fed right, a lot of interactions, toys, let out to fly, all good environment, and yet it's still picking at its feathers. So then you have to look at the vital force, and I'm thinking, why would something want to pick at it because a feather's coming in or going to be molting? Like sometimes
then you would ask questions to see, is it just when new feathers are coming in that they're picking, or are they picking old feathers that have been there a long time? If they're picking old feathers that have been there a long time, then it's probably not that.
Okay.
So it definitely would be a case-taking question to ask.
Okay, that's good. So can you give us any more examples?
Dobermans suck on their flanks or suck on blankets. Siamese cats tend to suck on blankets. There's certain breeds that have more of a tendency to do this. And
they suck on a blanket. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Say that again?
They'll suck holes in the blankets, and they'll suck holes in their skin.
Wow.
They'll suck until the hair is gone, or sometimes they'll just suck all the time, but won't cause damage to either the blanket and the flank. But it's clearly something that seems bizarre.
Yes, it is. So how do we look at that any further?
Well, again, you know that This is an example of an OCD behavior. Most OCD behaviors are normal behaviors that have gone awry. So it's sort of like the vital force mistunement is causing something that's normal to continue longer than it should. So baby puppies and baby kittens suckle. And they often soothe themselves when they're young by sucking, even when they're not hungry. They may suck not on the breast, but on some other part of their mom. So that suckling is a soothing, relaxing thing. And so as they grow older, instead of learning appropriate behaviors, they take out their anxiety in this normal behavior that's now become an abnormal behavior.
Mm-hmm. And do they have to be trained to let go of whatever behavior is normal at a particular age of development?
No, that's something that should happen with a healthy vital force. That would happen naturally.
Uh-huh.
This is a mistunement in the vital force. So those dogs and cats are put on ACE, Promazine, Prozac, stuff like that.
And that's really a shame.
A shame when people don't know about holistic medicine.
And what is a veterinarian or an allopathic physician thinking when they see this type of a behavior, which is like an immaturity, they're not letting go of a kind of what wouldn't be normal in a younger person or younger child or an animal, and it's continuing to... They're using it as a device to soothe their anxiety or nervousness or whatever it might be, and they're continuing. What are they thinking when the answer is Prozac or a drug as opposed to, okay, so you put a person into therapy. What do you do for a dog or a cat that's doing this?
You give them homeopathy, Reiki, flower essences, et cetera.
But, I mean, I'm kind of trying to figure out, you can't give them therapy, but you can give them attention. Why are they behaving like that in the first place?
OCD disorders, if it's really OCD, if you've made the distinction between we're doing great with the environment, we're paying plenty of attention, we're doing everything, there's a good diet, we're not vaccinating, then you know... It's truly OCD, and this is a mistunement of the vital force that's expressing itself in these compulsive behaviors.
Uh-huh.
And so then what we have to do is continue good attention, lots of exercise, playing with them, good diet, no vaccines. We have to continue all that and add in something that will fix the mistunement of the vital force.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
this is really
they've
good.
They've actually done studies. A Dr. Dodman has done studies showing that there's one specific gene associated with canine OCD, and there's actually structural brain abnormalities
mm-hmm.
in dogs. And
something tells me, I'm going to jump
mm-hmm.
in there. Something tells me they're always going to find something genetically with whatever it is. What you're looking for, you're going to find it genetically or in the brain, whatever. But I believe that those things may always have been there, but the behavior or the illness or whatever, there's a trigger that turns it on and makes it exhibit that particular
Absolutely.
Symptom.
Absolutely.
So the genetics are probably there all the time. So, I mean, I don't know. It's not my thing to be searching in that place. Rather, I'd be searching in all of the things that you said first, the environment, the diet, the medications like vaccination, making sure they get enough exercise, they have a good place for sleeping, their interactions with the other pets, children or people in the house are dynamically, you know, comfortable for everyone. I mean, there's so many other things that can be addressed as opposed to, well, let's find a genetic reason or give them a drug to just stop this behavior. It just seems to me strange.
Well, there's actually two, you're making two different points here. So one is certainly what's needed is, what's most useful is to be able to discover what the trigger is and knowing what many common triggers are to avoid those rather than looking for a drug to do it. So number one is sort of the treatment side of it. But the other side is going and looking for the cause. And mm-hmm. you could look for the cause as one of these triggers and fix that, or you could be looking at the cause as a genetic cause. The usefulness mm-hmm. of discovering genetic causes is that once you start saying, oh, this could be genetic,
mm-hmm.
then you start looking at why even the conventional people start then looking a little more into, well, why doesn't every dog with this gene, does every dog with this gene have this problem? What's
mm-hmm.
the difference between the dogs with this gene that have the problem and the dogs with this gene that don't have the problem?
Mm-hmm.
So I think you could come, I think you could get some, a lot of usefulness by
mm-hmm.
actually carefully looking, carefully doing genetic studies. And the second reason that genetic studies could be useful is when they're, when it's feasible financially, you can do a genetic screen when they're young and find out what things they're susceptible to, and you may be able to actually improve homeopathic treatment if you know what conditions you've got to be, you know, you're going to be worrying about.
How does it relate to the homeopathic treatment? Explain that part.
Well, if you mm-hmm. knew that this Doberman had an OCD gene,
mm-hmm. okay,
then number one is you'd be warning the caretaker that this dog has this gene, and therefore, here are the things you want to be careful about. You want to be sure that there's, you know, great exercise. You want to be sure, so the various things that lead to OCD in Dobermans. And you're going to be, the person is then going to be watching more carefully, not just for OCD signs, but for any health issues. So you can then be, they can then be more proactive with their health care because they're warned, oh, my dog may have a major problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to be more proactive. So it's not that it'll help you find the remedy. It's that it will have people come in for care sooner.
Right.
Because the sooner you can start homeopathic treatment, the more likely you are to cure.
Mm-hmm. It almost sounds like everybody could use just the educational preparation, you know, to say you're having a new pet, these are the things that you need to look at, keep your journal like you have,
mm-hmm.
And keep your healthy journal that Christina Chambro will be able to provide for you, and and
mm-hmm.
You know, it sounds like just general caretaking to me, and if you notice things that are different, or I guess, I don't know, maybe you're right.
I think what it does is because of the world we live in, but even people that are just super holistic, if you know there's a definitely, so should everybody on the planet be taking 25 anti-cancer supplements every day of their life? Probably not.
Uh-huh.
It's probably going to, you know, it may overwhelm the body. It may make them broke. It could, you know, there are all sorts of things. But if somebody knows that they have the gene for cancer,
okay,
maybe they're going to take a little more care in that area. Maybe for them it would be worth doing testing that normally wouldn't be recommended on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there is benefit in knowing that there's a potential for a problem, because I think all of us tend to get busy and not necessarily take the time all the time to do everything we should. Like, I haven't
mm-hmm.
done my yoga yet this morning.
Right.
But
well,
I got to tell
I,
you, if I had, If I had had cancer, I think I would prioritize my life differently.
Mm-hmm.
So that I always made sure that I took time and got that done as a priority first thing in the day.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the usefulness. The other thing may be, the other piece is if it were inexpensive enough to do the test, if you had an animal with OCD,
mm-hmm.
with what you thought was OCD, that was having these behavior issues, and you did the test, and it came back that didn't have the gene for it,
mm-hmm.
then you might spend more time looking for other causes of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So you might spend more time looking at the environment, et cetera, to see if that was the cause of the problem, because the gene wasn't there. If the gene was there, you would go, wow, you know, it could be some of the environmental issues, but I think I'm going to have to immediately get started with a homeopath, because we definitely have a misattunement of the vital force here. So I could see that being another usefulness.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
That makes sense?
Yeah, you're making me think quite a bit. So people and animals may not have a gene for a particular, would we call this a disease, OCD?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Dis-ease.
It is definitely an uh-huh. ill-at-easeness. So it's a dis-ease, yeah.
Okay, so if a living organism doesn't have a gene for it and they're displaying the symptoms of that dis-ease, is it a susceptibility? What is it? I mean, if...
Yeah, I think it's a susceptibility.
Uh-huh.
I think you're right.
Interesting. I'm just kind of wrapping my mind around the idea
The other thing is we can't look at all the genes that are out there either.
Uh-huh.
And, the truth is, it might not even be genes itself. It might just be... I mean, how do genes relate to the vital force? Where are genes when we're talking about vital force issues?
Mm-hmm.
Does the vital force create our genes? Does the vital force create the cellular expression of our genes? Is the vital force unrelated totally to our genes?
Well, we have to define what are the genes? What are they doing?
Exactly. So those are all issues. You know, those definitely are issues to be explored.
And we know really so little. I mean, even to me, when people say that they had appendicitis and, oh, that's an organ that has no function, in my mind, if it's there, it's supposed to be there for a reason, and it does have a function. And I think that we just haven't figured out what it is. It might be something very subdued and hidden from us, what it is doing there. My own personal opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's certainly possible.
Mm-hmm.
But what we do know that's not opinion is that we do know for sure that OCD-type behaviors in animals can be treated with homeopathy very successfully. They can also be treated with Reiki and flower essences. So there's no need for any animal with OCD-type issues to have to be put on drugs, or for most animals with OCD issues to be put on drugs. We're not always successful, so I have to say, Kate, you know, sometimes that's needed. But first step is to seek holistic care. because that's more than likely to cure the issues.
Wow. This was really, this was a show that really made me think and brought new information to light when we went into an area that we typically don't. And I so appreciate the fact that you have been available to speak with us on Blog Talk Radio Homeopathy World Community. Your life experience and with so many animals and in organizations that discuss a variety of issues with animals today. Did you have any news that you wanted to let folks know?
Oh, actually, I do. Thank you. I sort of completely forgot this, but we have just picked a date for the Calgary. The course in British Columbia never happened. We didn't get enough people signed up for it. So people in Calgary have now put together a course and will have an evening holistic lecture on October 25th. Holistic Health for Your Animals on the 26th, Introduction to Homeopathy on October 27th, and then the Intermediate Homeopathy course where I cover case-taking, learning how to repertorize, learning how to do case analysis and select the appropriate remedy, the appropriate potency, the appropriate administration, and evaluation of response, and then a whole day work doing practice on that. So that'll go from Monday, the 28th of October, through Friday, November 1st. And it's going to be in incredibly wonderful Calgary, Alberta.
It sounds like it will be great. And anybody who's listening, if you have comments, if you have questions, you can contact Christina Chambrow, DVM. You can go to myhealthyanimals.com or just put Christina Chambrow into your search engine. I wanted to mention something about search engine, if I can find it. It was because Google is basically, it says, no PRISM, no surveillance, no government backdoors. The government is spies on you through the Internet. If you want to use a different search engine, there's one called startpage.com, https://startpage.com, which supposedly does not collect any information and protects people's privacy and civil liberties. And what else can they find on your website?
What was that again? It was HTTP.
Let me see if I can put it into my website. If I just put start page, just put startpage.com and see what you come up with. Yep, that'll work.
And that's easier to tell people. That's good.
It says the world's most private search engine.
Great. Excellent.
Okay.
So come to my website and you can find all sorts of wonderful things.
So it's
just come explore, read the articles, and come up to Calgary in late October. That information will be on my website soon. We just decided last night, so I'll get it up in the next couple of days. So who to contact will be up there. And thank you again so much for putting these on, and you're going to be on a wonderful cross-country trip, so enjoy that.
Our next short show is supposed to be the second weekend in the month, which would be Wednesday, September 11th at 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time.
Excellent.
And so have a great day, everyone. I want to let folks know, if you're still listening, that tomorrow is going to be Thursday at 1 p.m. Alan Phillips and I will be discussing vaccinations and your rights in the United States. We have a very lively show, controversial subjects, news, current events, all sorts of great stuff going to be happening there. And then on the following Monday, we're going to have Mary Aspinwall, homeopath, and she's going to be talking about a very important subject that she has been working with children, with autism. It's called First Aid and Minor Illness for Autistic Children with Sensitive Digestive Tracts. That's August 12th, Monday at 11 a.m. on NissanCommunications.com. That's the Health In Show. Each Monday, live video stream show with Mary Aspinwall. So thanks so much for listening. And don't forget to share these shows on Twitter, on Facebook, on your websites. You can even copy the widget and put it directly on there of either all the shows or any of the shows. And we're just so happy that you have tuned in today. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Pet Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopaths Debbie Brook and Dr. Christina Chambreau. We encourage you to follow our show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when show airs, share with friends on Facebook and Twitter, and send in your comments and questions. See you next time!